Understanding Traumatic Brain Injury. When television anchor Kim Block slipped on an ice patch in her yard and hit her head, she had no idea that injury might end her 38-year career, or that one day she'd find just going to the drugstore an overwhelming prospect. Kim's story, unfortunately, is far too common. It is estimated that 2.8 million people sustain a traumatic brain injury every year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Kim joins us to talk about her injury and journey to recovery, and what she hopes everyone understands about people who have sustained a TBI. We'll also talk with a neuropsychologist about some of the latest research on the brain and find out about resources available to brain injury patients. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Every year, millions of Americans sustain a traumatic brain injury, also known as a TBI. It might happen from a fall, a stroke, or an accident. For many TBI patients, life changes forever, but there have been important advances in treating these injuries. Here to discuss what it's like to live with and treat traumatic brain injury, someone who is well-known and well-loved in Maine, Kim Block, longtime anchor and reporter at WGME Television. 2 winters ago, Kim fell on the ice and suffered a TBI. Also with us, Dr. Tom Miller, Clinical Director of Goodwill of Northern New England and head of their Neuro Rehab Program. Thank you both for joining us today on Maine Calling.
Thank you. Thanks. Good morning, Jen and Dr. Miller.
Good morning, Kim and Jennifer.
And we invite your comments and questions. Please send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Kim, as I just mentioned, you sustained your brain injury a little more than 2 years ago. Happened right in your yard. Take us back, if you can, if it's not too painful, take us back to that day. What happened?
Hang on. I'm sorry. I'm happy to. I just was plugging in my charger real quick again. I had to let the cat out of the room. This is the reality of live radio. I would happily bring you back to that day. It was painful for quite a while to talk about, but I'm you know, a couple years out here, and I just agree with you that it's so important to share our stories, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about traumatic brain injuries, and what happened to me could so very easily happen to anyone else. It was January 3rd, 2019. We had had a bit of snow, and then things had warmed up, so it had melted in a lot of areas and then gotten cold and refrozen again. And there was a very light snow falling on top of the ice, which, of course, made it difficult to see. And I had driven my car. I had lent to my husband and kids who went skiing. It had the really good snow tires. And I was borrowing my husband's truck. We have a very steep driveway. And I made it to the top and realized I had forgotten my phone. Now, Jen, you know how phones are critical in our business, and it especially was in the newsroom. And so I knew I had to go back and get it, and I knew I couldn't drive back down. So I decided to walk on the lawn part of my house because I knew the driveway would just be too steep and slick. And as I got, I wasn't particularly careful. Admittedly, I was in a hurry. I was already late for work. And as I got close to my house, pretty close, all of a sudden, my feet just hit this patch of ice that I couldn't see under that light snow. My feet went out from under me, and I landed on the back of my head, which means that part of my body really broke my fall, hit nothing but the back of my head, and slammed up again and smashed it back down. And as I did that, I felt this odd sensation, something I'd never felt before, and that was the inside of my head, my brain, smashing against either side of my skull, just moving back and forth, back and forth. And it was such a strange sensation that I uttered out loud, uh-oh, I just knew somehow this wasn't good. It just stopped me in my tracks. I didn't lose consciousness, but I was very woozy. And I sat there for I'm not sure how long because there was nobody else around, no one to call for help. And eventually I convinced my legs to move and to stand up. And I walked into my house, sat down for a little while, called the newsroom, said I was going to be a little late, had a pretty bad headache, but figured I could make it to work. At that time, it was close to news time, and I didn't want to throw everything into chaos or just a big curveball. So I decided to go back in, and as I walked up the lawn, I fell two more times, but this time forward, not backwards, but still a little bit jarring. Got in my car and went to work, and I told people what had happened. I felt a strange sensation of this confusion and just not clarity, and my head was starting to hurt a little bit more, but I figured I'd make it through a newscast. I'll go through this part quickly, but Jen, you're well aware what that means. You go into an environment where you're under bright lights, you have a lot of noise, you are walking and talking at the same time. People are giving you information through your earpiece, so you're having to process that often while you're moving. It's probably the worst possible environment that you could expose a newly injured brain to. And I did that for several hours. And by the end of it, it was, everything was so exaggerated. The lights were so bright. The voices were so loud. It was absolutely uncomfortable. And I knew at that point I had to go to the ER. I did go to the ER. And I thought I would be back at work the next day. And the truth is, I never made it back to the anchor desk. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to stop for a minute in case you have any questions about what happened next. But I just wanted
Kim, I mean, knowing you, I'm not surprised you went right to work. But such an amazingly important lesson for anybody else who experiences that. Don't just get in the car and go to work like so many of us would. But I know that for that first year or so, you were determined to try to get back to work. You tried everything you could.
Well, I really did. That was my goal. I mean, I wanted to go back to work the next day. The strange part was waking up the next day, things hurt a lot more than just my head. I had obviously had whiplash. There wasn't a muscle in my body that didn't hurt so bad. I was essentially immobile for a week, and I could not, the room would not stop spinning. I couldn't hear voices. I had to be in absolute quiet and darkness. And even though they say, you know, don't do that for long term, it was essential short term. When I got out of that crisis mode, and I kept telling work, you know, I'll be back in a couple days, I'll be back in a week, it'll be next week. It went on like this week after week after week as I started different therapies. I worked with a neuropsychologist, as Dr. Miller is. I worked with occupational therapists and speech therapists and physical therapists, cranial sacral therapy, osteomanipulation, just anything I could think of with the goal of getting back to that anchor desk. And things improved, though not quickly. It was probably 8 months before I dared drive a car. And the first time I did, I sat behind the wheel like a, 80-year-old woman, just gripping it and terrified. You know, I was going maybe 15 and it felt like 80. And very difficult to see with your peripheral vision, that anything to the side of you. The dizziness was still there. And the cognitive piece was really what got me, Jen. That is usually the last thing to come back if it's going to. And that's improved as well, but I still have a lot of difficulty with processing information, and I'm still not able to read a book fully. And so it became clear that I was not going to be able to handle, you know, the rigors of anchoring and reporting, which was really sad for me. And I felt like such a failure. And you know, most people do recover. I had fallen down the stairs 10 years prior and bumped my head and had a concussion and had some sensitivity to light and noise, but it went away in about a week. And so that was my expectation. But I wound up with this photophobia and hyperacusis, which is that sensitivity to noise and light. That's still quite difficult for me. And that's, those are major components of sitting in a new studio. So
right.
They were so kind to stick with me for a year to try to see if I could get to a place where I could do the job. And then I had to say goodbye. It was really one of the saddest things I've had to do. I loved my career and I didn't feel ready. I didn't feel ready to go, but I'm grateful I had the opportunity to explain what happened and that I didn't just disappear off the face of the earth and let people know that it's not always the case. There are about 15% of us for whom traumatic brain injuries are long-term, indeed chronic. And it's been a long road of accepting that there's kind of a new me and there's a lot to be grateful for and a lot of ways to challenge myself, but it's different. It's a very different way of being. Your brain is everything. And so it does change your life, certainly.
And Kim, the fact that you're able to be here with us today is a sign of how far you've come.
It certainly is. I would, you know, what's going on inside my brain now is something that people can't see. I think, you know, fortunately, I've gotten to the point where I present pretty well and my thoughts come fairly quickly, I hope. But it's a process. It's a workout. It's like a mental workout. It's as if you've got a, you know, broken ankle and you're going to the gym and you're doing your exercises. That for me is what thinking, talking, and reading is. It's work.
Well, Kim, we're so appreciative of your willingness to share your story, and I know so many people are listening to this right now, feeling such a sense of caring for you right now. Dr. Miller, as you listen to Kim Block tell her story, do you think hers is quite unusual, or is this what you see time and again?
It's pretty much what we see in the clinic. And some of the things that Kim said, especially the idea that it can be painful to talk about, at least for a while, that you don't feel like yourself, you can feel like a failure. A lot of those kind of thoughts and feelings that go through a person's mind as they're recovering can be a good part of the problem. And, of course, in rehab, what we try to do is address those along with, you know, more of the physical and cognitive effects of the injury as well. So, yeah, a lot of what Kim said rings true. And, Kim, I'm actually impressed. I can't imagine working in a TV studio without a brain injury, and you went in on the day of your injury and probably pulled it off. So that is impressive.
Well,
go ahead, Kim. Go ahead.
Well, I'm grateful I had that. I really did. I'd just come back from vacation, and Governor Mills had the day before been reelected, and I thought, well, at least I got to do a great last story, good event in Noon, in Maine, our first female governor. But yeah, the environment was very, very toxic to the injury.
Mm. Dr. Miller and Kim, I've heard this expression from you and from others. Dr. Miller, I've heard the expression that if you've heard about one brain injury, you've heard about one brain injury. Everyone's is different and nobody has the same journey, correct?
That's true. That's very true. Among several reasons, one is because any blow to the head can be different. Everyone's system, of course, is different. In a way, it's kind of unfortunate we have this term concussion because it covers such a wide variety of difficulties or problems from the injury itself, and also the severity or the acuity of the injury is kind of subsumed in this one term, so it can be a little bit misleading. There are also milder versions of concussions. Most people recover from those, and then more severe forms like the one that Kim had.
Mm. Kim, I have
and
a question
so
for you. Okay. Yeah, but I'm going to have Adrian, who's calling from South Portland, ask this question, because I believe, Adrian, you have the same question I was about to ask him. So why don't you ask her that?
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me on. And I I wanted to say to Kim Block, you were the commencement speaker when I graduated from high school, and it was a really memorable speech. So I wanted to thank you, about 20 or so years late. But I've dealt with long-term illnesses that are internal things that people can't see. They can see that I'm standing up and walking around and talking to them. It's hard for them to understand that there are some days when I can't get out of bed because, you know, my head is spinning and the room is spinning. And I wanted to find out what it's been like for you to deal with that. And how do you explain to people who may think, you know, you look fine. How do you get them to understand what it is that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis?
Adrian, I would have to say that is one of my biggest frustrations and realities of having an invisible injury. And I feel you, I hear you, I really do. Because you do hopefully get to a point where you present well and you can be with your friends and do things at certain times, but you just can also hit a wall or pay a big price for that one good day that you had. And that's the part that people don't see. So I've just tried to explain it to people as if, you know, you have to just trust me that, you know, I know my truth, and my truth is that I have an injury you can't see. And you, I would just ask your patience and your understanding in just learning a little bit about it. And it is frustrating because you want to do well. It means that you're succeeding. And if so, of course, you don't want to walk around and look ill because, you know, that would mean you're not doing as well as you'd like to be. But on the other hand, there are times when you wish you had a big sign on your head that said, brain injury here, caution, you know, please speak more softly, talk more slowly, understand that I'm not the same as you. So I think that's just the challenge of an invisible injury. I think what I tell people is, you know, for me, going out and maybe attending something or being around a lot of people, it's akin to running a marathon. And if you had a broken foot, you wouldn't be running a marathon. And so, you know, you've got to understand that I have to limit what I do based on how I feel that day. But I do understand it's a very, very difficult thing to explain, which is why I think it's so important to keep raising awareness about it. And there are so many different types of concussions, as Dr. Miller said. None of us follows the same path, but there are a lot of similarities.
Adrian, thank you so much for your call. We're speaking with Kim Block and Dr. Tom Miller about living with and treating traumatic brain injury. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from St. Mary's Health System, accepting new primary care patients in Lewiston, Auburn, and Poland. stmarysmaine.com/primarycare. By Cherished Possessions, recycling treasures from Maine homes for 35 years, Auburn Street in Portland, or cherishedpossessions.com. And Thomas College, where you can earn an advanced degree in business, education, criminology, or cybersecurity on your schedule. thomas.edu.
Starting new jobs remotely in the middle of a pandemic has meant a lot of Zooms and emails, not so much the face-to-face stuff to get to know people, but that could soon be changing.
I have to learn how to, like, become friends with people again. I don't know.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, revisiting remote work a year into this pandemic. We'll have the numbers from Wall Street, the rest of the day's business news, of course, next time on Marketplace.
You can hear that this evening at 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is committed to finding new and better ways of connecting communities. That's why we are so excited about our newest news initiatives. Maine Public News Connect will make the week's news available in multiple languages so more Mainers can have access to trusted, reliable information. Our Report for America partnership will share stories from Maine's immigrant communities to help us better understand the state we live in. You can help make these projects possible with a donation now at Maine.gov. public.org/connecting. Your generous gift will be counted in the Connecting Communities fundraiser happening tomorrow here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Jennifer Rooks. Today we're discussing traumatic brain injuries and advances in helping people recover from these office devastating injuries. Joining me, Kim Block, longtime anchor and reporter at WGME and a TBI survivor, and Dr. Tom Miller with Goodwill of Northern New England, where he is the head of neuro rehab. If you have a comment or question, you can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or call us at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Carol Starr, who is founder and facilitator with Brain Injury Voices and the author of To Root and to Rise, Accepting Brain Injury. Carol, thanks for joining us. I understand you're in the middle of something else and snuck out just to join us, which I really appreciate. You're also a brain injury survivor. Tell us about your injury and then why you decided to write a book.
Yes, well, thank you so much for inviting me to be on the program today. And yes, I am in the middle of a Zoom meeting, which I told the group, well, I'm going to be gone for a few minutes and I will come right back. So this is one of the things that technology allows us to do these days. So my own injury happened back in 1999. So I have been living with this for a very long time now. It was from a car accident that I sustained a brain injury. I was broadsided on the driver's side by somebody going 50 miles an hour. I was 32 years old at the time, and like so many brain injury survivors, this injury changed my life. I had been a teacher before. I was also a musician, and as much as I tried to, I could not go back to my old life. As much as I wanted to, as hard as I tried, that it was over. And I grieved tremendously the loss of who I was, who I thought I was going to be, what I thought my life was going to be. But one of the things that we brain injury survivors have to do is we have to reinvent ourselves. And it takes time, but that's what happened to me. Over time, I did manage to reinvent myself, that to find things, ways that I can still make a difference, but honor the limitations that I still have, that I have every single day. I still live with symptoms, you know, every single day, but I now do speeches. I did write a book. I lead Brain Injury Voices. All of this is very part-time. It's, you know, within just a few hours of a day that my brain gives me, that I have good mental energy, that I learned that having a, quote, career doesn't mean 40 hours for me. It means, like, you know, like a few hours, a few times a week, but I get that nice feeling. And I wrote the book because, you know, coming to acceptance, coming to terms with the fact that I'm not the same person that I was before, it was one of the hardest parts of my journey. I really thought that I can't accept this. I cannot come to terms with the fact that I have limitations, that I have a cognitive deficit. So, but I eventually did. And so I wrote the book to help other brain injury survivors who are also struggling on that path to share the things I learned so that I could help other people.
Carol, you were recommended to me by a friend of mine who has a brain injury, and he told me how helpful some of the groups that you've helped organize have been for him. He mentioned the organization, what he called WINGS, and I understand also there's Brain Injury Voices. Can you tell me a little bit about these organizations and then also why it matters so much to have people who have had brain injuries talk with one another?
Absolutely, yes. So Brain Injury Voices is we're a volunteer group that my mentor and I founded back in 2010. We have been based out of New England rehab, although we're based out of Zoom these days. We are brain injury survivors who still want to make a difference. So we have done presentations, we've done mentoring. We run the brain injury support group that in pre-pandemic times met at New England Rehab. We now meet on Zoom, and the support group is called WINGS. And well, WINGS is an acronym. It stands for We Inspire, Nurture, Guide, and Support. Because it is so important for survivors to be able to talk to other survivors. There is nothing like talking to somebody else who gets it. Early on in my own journey, I talked to other survivors. And as much as I needed professionals, and I definitely did, as much as they helped me, talking to other people who are experiencing the same thing, because this injury, it makes you feel like you're losing your mind, that the symptoms can be so out there that you just want to talk to somebody else who's experiencing it. And that it's so valuable that it makes you know that you're not alone, because it does make you feel alone, especially when so many of us, we look just fine. If you looked at me, you'd never think that I have a disability, something that impacts me every single day. But I do. And that can be hard to live with when people tell you, but you look great. We hear that a lot as brain injury survivors. And so other survivors can help you through that. So I think it is vitally important, and especially now during the pandemic, because so many of us are so much more isolated that we can't access some of the supports that we had in the before times. So now being able to talk to others, even just virtually, I think it is so very important. And there are numerous support groups all across the state of Maine. Wings is not the only one.
Carol, I'm so grateful to you for taking a break from your Zoom class to call in. And we are going to put links to the organizations you've mentioned on our website and on our Facebook page, and more. So thank you so much. That was Carol Starr. She is the founder and facilitator with Brain Injury Voices and author of To Root and to Rise, Accepting Brain Injury. Now you get to go back to your meeting. Thanks, Carol. And Dr. Miller, before we move along with the calls, because these personal stories are so important, so compelling, but I want to talk just a little bit about the research and the science. We know a lot more, not myself, but you and others who work with brain injury patients understand a lot more about the science of the brain today than even 5 or 10 years ago, correct?
That's correct. A lot of what we know about brain functioning is new in the last 20, 30, maybe 35 years. So we do know more. Part of that comes from, basic research, medical research. Part of that comes from clinical practice, what we can see, what we're working with in our clinics. So there's been, a lot of improvement in our approaches, more specificity, and that includes also, the other folks who work in a brain injury clinic, like physical therapists, speech therapists, occupational therapists, nursing, and so on. It's very much a collaborative effort.
And Dr. Miller, I understand that there's a lot more information about how the brain can heal. That we used to think that the brain didn't heal itself very well.
That's true. There's actually more what they call plasticity in the brain than we realized. Some areas actually are more active, more plastic than others. There certainly are ways that we have found that can enhance that healing process as well. Of course, that's what neurorehab is all about. But a lot of it are basic things that anyone can do. It's the big three are pretty common. Good nutrition, sufficient rest, and daily exercise are extremely helpful. After a brain injury, of course, the exercise part is only what you can tolerate.
We're going to go to Chris, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you, Jennifer? Hey, Cam, it's Chris Cast.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah. Hey,
my buddy, my pal, saved me.
It's a small community, I guess. I too am a survivor living with a brain injury. In 2015, I had an ischemic stroke and threw a clot into the the backside of my brain, and it rattled me. I'm a creative person. I make my living with my brain. And it was a difficult journey to get back, because one of the things that you have to learn how to do when you have a brain injury is to ask you a very simple four-letter word, and that's help. And I was unable to drive, as Kim was, for 6 to 7 months. I was unable to do things. It was all I could do to get through a day without having to nap. And it took me a good year through occupational therapy, through went to a place called the Brain Training Center of New England to have neurofeedback therapy. But through this process, I learned to forgive myself because there are parts of my life that no longer exist in my brain. Someone will come up to me and say, "Hey, remember that?" And I'll have nothing. And they'll show me a picture and I'll say, "Looked like we had a good time." And I think it was Kim who said that people say, "But you look good." I came to hate those words because unless someone could spend 3 seconds behind my eyes in my head that was slightly scrambled at the time, they don't know what it feels like. And to this day, there are things that, we all have them, but you get up and you walk out of a room, you go, "What was I about to do?" Think of that happening times 11. And through it, I've learned to forgive myself and just adopt new coping techniques. And for me, humor, I can joke about it. And that's all I can offer. And, I too, as Kim has, I've done some talks and about it. And it's something that it is a hidden thing. And people look at us and go, "Oh, you look great." Well, yeah, no. So I really appreciate this topic. I really empathize, and I wish I could give you all hugs, but, COVID. I just thank you for taking my call.
Chris, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. And I, of course, wish you all the best. And what you say reminds me of a post that's coming in. You've already given us a good bit of advice, Chris and Kim and Carol, that maybe saying, "Boy, you look great," isn't the best thing to say to someone. Here's another question. Diana on Facebook says, and Kim, I'll have you answer this. What is the best way to support a friend or family member who is experiencing long-term effects of a TBI?
Well, isn't it so interesting because that we all do feel that frustration with that question. But I think what has been a really nice remedy for me is that I've suggested to my family and my friends, when they say, "Hey, you look great," and I know it's coming from good intent and they mean well, they could follow that up by saying, "But how do you feel?" And it's just that simple acknowledgement that, that you are dealing with something they can't see. So it allows you to just express the truth of what really is happening and how you're feeling. And so it makes it so much nicer then you can take in that you look great without that resentment or this feeling that it's not recognizing what's really truly going on. And I would say, just meet somebody where they are. Call them and say, "Are you up for a phone call?" or text first. Text first, "Are you up for a phone call?" My friends have been really good about understanding that I need to limit our interactions. And so we'll ahead of time say, "I'd love to see you, but can you keep track of the clock? And in 45 minutes to an hour, can you just remind me that you have to go now?" Because I'll get caught up also in how great it is to be spending time with somebody. And then stretch myself beyond the limit. And then there is always a price to pay afterwards. So if your friends and family can kind of learn with you what works and help kind of guide you with that. But not to lose contact, because this injury can be very isolating. It's frightening. It's different. You are struggling to find this new you. Like Chris said, how you can contribute, what you can do, it can be lonely. So it's really important to, not be afraid of friends who have an injury you don't understand. Just say, "I'm here." And that makes a huge difference.
Chris, thank you so much for calling in. We are going to take another quick break. We're talking about traumatic brain injury. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Fresh Eggs Daily, a Maine business committed to helping others raise backyard chickens from hatching chicks to laying hens. FreshEggsDaily.com and Revision Energy, an employee-owned solar company dedicated to helping Mainers reduce carbon emissions. Learn more at RevisionEnergy.com.
I'm Tanya Mosley. President Biden faces the same challenge his predecessors did. What to do about Afghanistan, where U.S. troops have been deployed since 2001?
It is not my intention to stay there for a long time.
We'll speak with former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel about the war in Afghanistan. That's next time on Here and Now.
That's coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 12 noon here on Maine Public Radio. A reminder about our Maine's Political Pulse podcast and corresponding newsletter. Maine's Political Pulse is a weekly discussion on the politics here at home with our two top Maine Public News political reporters, Steve Missler and Mal Leary. The Political Pulse podcast and newsletter are both available online at mainepublic.org. You can have the Political Pulse newsletter delivered straight to your inbox on Friday mornings by subscribing at mainepublic.org/pulse.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, coping with a traumatic brain injury. My guests are Kim Block, who is a longtime anchor and reporter at WGME, and Dr. Tom Miller with Goodwill of Northern New England. We're going to go now to Daniel Kagan, who is an attorney with Berman Simmons, and he's a personal injury law firm. Daniel is also a survivor of traumatic brain injury. Dan, thanks so much for giving us a call. Tell us about how you sustained a TBI.
I'm happy to, Jennifer. Thanks for having me. I want to say hi to my friends Tom and Kim both, and thank you both for everything you're doing to get the word out about this really difficult process that many of us have experienced. Jennifer, for the first 25 years of my practice, I spent a lot of time representing individuals who had sustained brain injury. It was just an area that, by coincidence, I had an interest in. It is fascinating to figure out the brain science and to watch as it has developed. But it was about 5 years ago that I was traveling overseas with my adult son, and we were involved in a terrible car accident, which left me, upon my return here, quite limited in all the ways that both Tom and Kim have talked about. What it left me with, Jennifer, is a profound appreciation for how fortunate I was relative to the many people I've represented over the years and still represent. And the big difference is the number one thing you can do after sustaining a brain injury is to be kind to yourself, give yourself time. This is not an injury that you can gut your way through or force your way through. The brain needs rest. And I am so fortunate that my partners here at Berman and Simmons not only accommodated but insisted that I take that time and rest, so that for several months I was not able to work, not able to function. And I truly believe that indulgence, so to speak, to give the disease what it needed, the condition what it needed to recover, is why I've been able to return fully to my practice.
From an attorney's point of view, what are the kinds of things that you find you have to help brain injury patients with? Are we negotiating with employers? Are you trying to get insurance settlements?
Absolutely. All of those things are true. You mentioned at the beginning the 2.7 or 8 million per year that are brain injuries that occur in the United States. According to the CDC, some 80% of those are traumatically caused, meaning some sort of event that as opposed to stroke. And in that situation, many of those are caused by some other entity's mistake, negligence, et cetera. And I can and often do help those folks recover. In terms of within that process, a lot of what I'm doing is helping them understand what they're going through and how to get help from their own families. And also, as you say, navigate what it means to return to work or not return to work and to get themselves to excellent facilities like Tom's at Goodwill, which is an outstanding facility that many of my many of my clients treat, that most people don't know where to turn. And the lawyers and the doctors work often hand in hand to make sure that we can overcome as much of that as possible.
Well, Dan Kagan, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. And I'm so glad to hear that you have recovered so fully that you're able to work as an attorney. That's astonishing. Daniel Kagan, an attorney with Berman and Simmons and a survivor of a TBI. We have so many questions coming in and so little time. I want to get to a couple of these, though. Maria says she has a friend who went through a very traumatic situation. Hold on, I just lost that. Darn. Oh, here it is. Went through a very traumatic situation, going through rehab for years now. But she says, of all the things, mostly his personality has changed. She says, I don't have the skill set to help. Just as a friend, it's hard. Could you address this aspect of personality change? She says he makes different choices now and is not the same person. Dr. Miller.
Yeah, personality change can happen usually when the injury is more severe. I guess something I would add as well is that the brain injury obviously affects the person who's had it. It also affects family and friends, especially when the person with the injury seems to change from the person they used to be. I think that's also distressing for the person with the injury. You know, something that we have to do anyway as healthy humans is we are actually remembering ourselves, although luckily we don't do this consciously. It's part of what our brain does for us. If any of the underpinning processes that operate that way are injured through a brain injury or a stroke or, you know, any other type of neurological cause, it can really throw off for that person who they are, what they do, what they were like, what they should be doing in the moment. Then there are other problems with memory, with attention and focus, problems in social functioning that add to the problem, so that a lot of things that are occurring in everyday activities that should feel pretty normal are not. Everything is more vivid. Everything is more problematic. And if there's a degree of impulsivity as well, you know, people can make choices that aren't helpful to them, but that they're less able to see and less able to correct.
I'm going to go now to Sarah Gaffney, who's calling in from the Brain Injury Association of America, the main chapter. Sarah, thanks so much for calling in. And as you listen to the question that we just had, I'm guessing and hoping that you're able to tell me about resources available to family members, friends and family who have had someone they care greatly about go through a traumatic brain injury.
Absolutely. So, you know, brain injury often happens really suddenly. I was a former brain injury caregiver for a number of years, and it's really devastating to both the survivor and the family members and caregivers. It really affects everybody. But the good news is that Maine does have a lot of resources, and we have a really robust Maine brain injury community. So the organization that I work for, the Maine chapter of the Brain Injury Association, we have a helpline, which anyone can call for, you know, information, resources, supports, and help navigating life after brain injury. And just so that everyone has that, it's 800-444-6443. And we have a lot of resources, both for survivors and for family members and caregivers. We have trainings posted on our website. We have a resource directory, an annual conference. We actually have a bunch of family caregiver trainings, webinars being offered later this spring for free. So there's a lot out there for support. The other thing I just want to mention, and Carol brought this up before, so did Kim, connecting with other survivors and other caregivers can be so amazing as people are recovering and navigating this new life. And Maine has a really fantastic brain injury support group network. We have 17 different brain injury support groups. Most are meeting virtually right now. There's a statewide virtual support group, and there's also a statewide virtual group for caregivers. So
great.
Well, there's Sarah, a lot out there.
Yeah, we're going to post everything we can on our Facebook page and on our webpage. Thank you so much for calling in. Sarah Gaffney, the Brain Injury Association of America, the Maine chapter. An email here from Chris. My wife suffered a TBI and went back to work way too soon. That meant we couldn't use long-term disability. And later, when we realized she needed more time to recover, my advice, do not rush the healing. And Dr. Miller, I'm sure you would say, hear, hear.
Absolutely. You know, most everyone wants to get better and, of course, wants to get better soon. And then there are also other pressures, too, you know, getting back to work, supporting your family, and so on and so forth. So there are reasons that people try. But it's a lengthy healing process. It's not one that's a great idea to take on, you know, on your own. It's great to hear, and also that I know about these support groups and resources that Maine has. I actually underwent pretty aggressive brain surgery at age 9, and this is many, many years ago, and there were none of those resources around, so everything took longer to recover. So definitely folks should not feel that they have to do it on their own. Certainly reach out to others, especially others who have, you know, gone through a similar bit of healing, and certainly to take your time with the healing. It takes a good deal of patience and persistence and courage, too. I think folks who are recovering from a brain injury need a certain amount of courage, but courage is kind of a funny thing. It isn't really a feeling. Certainly that isn't what the person who's doing something courageous feels. It's more a human quality that others observe. So it can be helpful for those folks who are recovering and healing to hear from folks who observe what they're going through and how they're handling it. That can be very helpful.
An email here from Sarah. As a person who survived a brain injury at the end of 2019, I have spent most of the last year isolating at home along with many others during this pandemic. As we begin to imagine returning to a time when large groups gather again and many people have anxiety about the drastic change in reality, what advice do you have for all of us as we deal with that anxiety from your own experiences of TBI? Kim, I will ask Dr. Miller this question as well, but Kim, I'm wondering if this is something that you've been thinking about and where you think you're going to go when we're able to be social again and when places are going to be more crowded.
Well, I have often joked that TBI survivors were among the most prepared for the COVID pandemic because a lot of us were leading kind of more slower paced, more isolated lives, you know, not necessarily out of choice, out of necessity. So I don't think things will change that much because I do find that being in large groups does trigger symptoms for me. But I am looking forward, of course, to, you know, experiencing the real life again and all of that. But I do think it's just going to have to be kind of pacing and people will just need to find their own comfort zones and, you know, what's tolerable and what's not. It's not so going to be so much different. I don't anticipate, boy, I'm going to run off and, you know, close down that bar. But I do think it will be wonderful to see friends and family and get that kind of in-person support that we haven't had.
And Dr. Miller, the anxiety of whether or not there's a pandemic or just taking those steps and trying to get back into some form of social life.
Yeah, that is difficult. I guess what I would say, I agree with Kim when she said something about pacing. It's important to try things, you know, to extend yourself just a little bit. So, for example, in being more social, you don't want to take on everything all at once. A little bit at a time is a pretty good pace. Whatever you can tolerate is a pretty good plan. With the idea that you'll do a little bit more next time you have an opportunity. So that idea of pacing, paying attention to how you feel and how you're functioning and what other folks are telling you can be helpful. And definitely reach out to other folks. That's very important. You know, what almost everyone has said is something about the feeling of isolation or loneliness. And I think that that feeling, especially that loneliness feeling, isolation, can run pretty deep at times. That would be something to keep in mind, and that other people, of course, can help with that. Mm. Hopefully, you have someone else you can reach out to.
We're going to go to Darren. Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Well, I just very briefly, Dr. Miller said something that really stuck with me, too, when he talked about, having courage. And I, at one point in this, turned to my therapist and said, this is so hard because I'm so used to giving my all and fighting and, bringing my A game and pushing myself. And that's just not working. That approach just isn't working. And I said, I've always been a warrior. And she looked at me and she said, Kim, you're still a warrior. And she had tears in her eyes. And then I did, because that's, I think, so important, as Dr. Miller said, for somebody else to look at me and see the courage it was taking. And that even if the fight wasn't what I was used to, it was still me fighting. And for her to acknowledge that meant everything.
Darren, in Portland, if you could ask your question really quickly, that'd be great. Unfortunately, we're almost out of time.
Oh, yeah, it's a wonderful program. I just want to advocate for the use of music as a therapy. I work and teach and play music with people who've had traumatic brain injuries. And, yes, they are each so different, each injury, so it's fascinating. I have a band with some of the people that we played the Freiburg Fair a few years and some county fairs and nursing homes until COVID shut that down. So, yes, it's kind of a disaster because the socialization, I think, is very important for people just to
Darren,
get out.
Darren, thank you. Yeah, and thank you for the work you do. And I do know, Dr. Miller, that music can be really powerful. We're learning more about that as well.
It can be very powerful. It can certainly be soothing. Music therapy is actually something that can be very helpful. It's been used a lot in folks after stroke to actually help return functioning. For example, with speaking, folks with aphasia, or with walking, ambulating after a stroke. So, it can be very, very powerful.
I need to apologize to everybody whose call and comment we haven't been able to get to on this program, but especially to thank our guest today for such an important conversation. The voices you heard, Kim Block, longtime television journalist here in Maine and a traumatic brain injury survivor. Kim, it's so wonderful to have you on the program.
Jen, I feel like we've come full circle, and it was really wonderful. And thank you so much for bringing attention to this.
And Dr. Tom Miller, clinical director with Goodwill of Northern New England and head of neuro rehab. Thank you for being on the program as well.
Thank you very much for having me. I hope this is helpful to folks.
Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris, Cindy Hahn, and Jonathan Smith produced the program. Tomorrow, a conversation about people who are new Mainers, who have moved here from somewhere else. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.